Live from Milton Keynes, this is the Saturday Breakfast Show with Meera Tudor Sharma on Teachers Talk Radio.
Good morning, Teacher Talk Radio listeners. Thank you very much for joining me. Hopefully you've got a cup of tea there in hand. I know I do on this kind of, it's a very rainy morning this morning. So yeah, hopefully you've got a lovely drink in front of you. If you are a teacher, hopefully you're a teacher listening to this today. Tell me what type of drink you've got in front of you. What sort of morning drink do you have? And how does that sum up your week? Let me know. I would love to know. You've got a really lovely lineup today, and I cannot wait to kickstart today. Just to give you a flavour, we are looking at the world of teacher training and how can we better support new professionals into our team when we know actually during lockdown there was much talk on the teaching profession, that we were having more recruitment, more teachers into the field of teaching, and more kind of interest. And we'll see whether that's actually true or not from our first guest, who is Sally Newton. And then later on in the show, you'll hear from Esther Johnson, who is will be an NQT next year and will be going through the 2-year process there. And then finally, we will have the grand finale with Becca Katmer, who is going to be shining a light on how do you approach leadership positions when you are in those training years. So hopefully there's something there for everyone to be taking away from the show. So I cannot wait. I'm so excited for you to have a full experience of kind of different aspects of teacher training, from the mentor side, from the experiences of trainees, as well as how do we go through those leadership roles. Now, I cannot wait to introduce my first guest, Sally Newton, who is a fabulous NQT and ITT coordinator at Oak Grove School. And she's worked for a variety of local providers. She has been wonderful in the area of Milton Keynes and has provided so much support for mentors, mentees, and just a powerhouse, shall I say. She's joined Tommy Flowers Skit as their associate partnership manager, which means that she's working at both St. Paul's and Oak Grove School. So you can imagine Sally's timetable looks pretty busy. Alongside this, Sally is an English media and film studies teacher, but her real passion lies in providing quality ITT and NQT training throughout that kind of induction period and in securing teachers of the future of Milton Keynes. And that is something else we'll be looking at too, is looking at how we are shaping the future of teaching moving forward, because that's a huge part of what we're doing here. So I cannot wait to give you that little flavour of what's going on. Sally will be calling in very shortly. I'm very excited. Kind of the backdrop to this is really looking at that lockdown period and thinking about how lockdown had impacted our recruitment of ITT and NQTs. It's quite astonishing as to how much conversation there was of the interest that there had been on teacher recruitment. And actually we're trying to bust some of these myths today with Sally this morning. Here is Sally. I can't wait. I cannot wait to have her. Good morning, Sally.
Hi, how are you?
Can you hear me okay?
I can. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. How wonderful. We've connected.
Thank you for that lovely introduction. How wonderful.
Oh, bless you. Well, I'm very excited. I feel like there's lots to be rattling through this morning, so we can only get started with 3 minutes in. I think that's the best way to start, to be honest with you. And I must say to our Teacher Talk Radio listeners that please do call in, because Sally is very open to answering any questions during the latter part of her segment. So around 9:25 to 9:30, Sally will be more than happy to take on any questions. So, Sally, what is your take then on how lockdown has impacted our kind of recruitment of ITTs, shall we say? And then we can have a think about and go into kind of NQTs too.
Yeah, great question. So actually, just a little correction there. The NQT is going, and it's going to become the ECT, so early careers teachers. Ah. So we move from a 1-year process to a 2-year process. But we could talk about that a bit more later. In terms of the impact of lockdown on teacher training, it's a really interesting one. I don't think that we've seen the rise in applications that we were hoping for or expecting, and that might be due to furlough being extended. But I think we also need to consider the negative perception of teachers in the press. the long hours, the workload, the negativity surrounding teachers during lockdown, I think might have put some really good applicants off.
I see. And actually, that perception is quite damning, isn't it? Because it makes out the job, it loses the passion that we have for the job completely.
Yeah, absolutely. And we also, I think, the government have put us in a difficult position in terms of the world of ITT, because they've reduced bursaries, and in some subjects they've completely lost bursaries, which has actually been a total disaster. And it might seem idyllic for the government to think that people can retrain, that people from other industries will want to join teaching because of the security, because of the pension. But actually, people can't live on nothing for a year. And we used to have bursaries, for example, for subjects like geography. I know you have a teacher later on, Rebecca, who retrained from industry and went on to be a subject leader in her first year, in her NQT year. But we're not seeing those people retraining from industry now, because there's no bursary attached. So I think geography used to have sort of between 26k to 29k as a bursary, which meant that people from industry could leave their jobs knowing that they'd got security in that teacher training year.
And it's such a shame. I've got David Cunningham, who's just texted in saying and messaging that there's been a 40% kind of decrease in geography applications in itself. And it's really difficult. So the certain subject areas that are really going to be struggling. Have you noticed any particular subjects?
Absolutely. We've had, I think at the moment, we've appointed one geography for next year and one for the skip that I associate partnership manager with. We've recruited one geography for next year and one English so far, because the English bursary used to be 15,000, which was, there was some money there that could pay off your fees. Bear in mind that if you want to teach a train, not only would you have to take out a maintenance loan potentially, but you also have to pay nine and a half grand fees. We've seen a reduction in English because they've lost that 15,000 bursary, so only one English. And if you remember, we do the subject specialist for English. We've had sort of five and six most years at our provider, and that's just one provider in Milton Keynes.
Which is just such a shame, isn't it, to see that actually we could have had, there's so much more experience that you gain from having those applicants from industry, and they bring such a new energy into a department. And not to say that when you are coming from university, or if you are coming from education and going straight into teaching, that's, you know, a bad thing at all. But there's a kind of, there's something that we're missing, you know?
Yeah, they offer something a little bit special, I think. I'm one of the people that went straight from university into teaching. It was a vocation. I always knew I wanted to do it. But you do find some brilliant people that go into industry and they get to the point where their job is the same every single day and they feel like it's a little bit soul destroying. And teaching isn't that. You know, teaching is vibrant and different every day. It's going to be exciting. There are highs and lows. You're never, ever doing the same thing. And I think there are people that are sitting in desk jobs thinking, I want a piece of something different. I want to give back. And we're losing that because they will sit in jobs. And this idea that people are losing jobs because of the pandemic, well, the furlough scheme is great, but that means that people are not moving. And also there's a lot of work from home opportunities, which I think seem very attractive. So we're just not pulling in those people from industry. We're getting more and more people who are coming from universities, really. And there's nothing wrong with that. As you say, it's brilliant. But I think there's something lovely about having people think, I don't want to be in a desk job for the rest of my life. I want to contribute. I want to give back to society.
And it just creates a richer working environment. And also for the students to have that insight into different working environments from teachers firsthand. And I think that provides something very different. I mean, Leanne has texted in saying that, I remember going through all my savings in my training year and it's taken me 7 years in the job to build it back up. So your comments there, Sally, on finances has really struck a chord with some of our listeners. And it's such a shame that that financial support isn't there.
Absolutely. I think what we need to think about as well, we had Boris Johnson a few years ago promising that the starting salary for teachers would be 30k. Now, there might be some people who think, well, there are other key worker jobs that need to be that much money. But I would just like to say, you know, there are some key worker jobs where you don't have to do a degree beforehand. So we have trainees who are faced with huge student debts who then go into a profession and they've got to pay another £9,000 on top of that and possibly take out the maintenance loan. And the bursaries are for very few subjects now. And on the flip side to me saying that it's a real terrible loss with the bursaries, I think the subjects that still have bursaries are not attracting people. Even with a 24k bursary, we still never fill all of the positions we can for KET. So the subjects that still get the 24k bursary, chemistry, computing, maths, physics, well, we still never fill those places. So the bursary isn't working. And there's a huge part of me that just thinks, you're coming out of university with 60 plus debts already. You then have to train to teach and give yourself another at least 9k debt. And you're only going to start on a salary of 25, close to 26k now. The 30k starting salary has been pushed back to 2024. And I think that that potentially brought in a few more people, but it just doesn't seem competitive to private industry where you'd also get bonuses. Now, don't get me wrong, teachers get fabulous holidays. So that is something to think about. But I do think that there's a fix that's needed, I think. We can't just give bursaries to some subjects. I think there needs to be parity. We should probably be offering the same to every subject. It's difficult because things like history, PE, we always get the applications, but it seems very unfair if you're training in history and then you see a colleague training in computing getting 24k tax-free.
And it's damning, isn't it, really? And there's been lots of changes, hasn't there, Sally? Even with in regards to the drop in not having to have a degree anymore in the subject that you were teaching. And I know this comes from a kind of a secondary point of view. And those who are training to go into primary, there's a conversation that is definitely to be had there. But how much of an impact has that had?
That's really interesting. I think that you can train outside of your subject. It can work. But I think in order for it to be really successful, it needs to have a lot of input. I'm not totally sceptical, but it requires a lot of hard work from the ITT provider to make sure that subject knowledge enhancement courses are being taken and to make sure that they're delivering the subject knowledge enhancement. But it's a lot of pressure on the trainee as well, because, you know, have a think about it. It's very hard to balance the demands of teacher training when you have to write PGCE essays, but your lesson planning is taking you 5 hours because you've got to learn all of the content before you can even get to the nitty gritty of this is going to be my starter activity. This is what I'm going to do in the main and the plenary. There are only limited subject knowledge enhancement courses as well. And I think the government are stepping back on those and placing more pressure on the ITT provider. So in terms of the subject knowledge enhancement courses, there are maths, physics, chemistry, biology, computing languages, English, DT and RE. They're typically offered to the shortage subjects, but I do think we need to consider wider than that. You know, we have a shortage of business studies teachers, for example. We're seeing more applications for sociology teachers. Well, if you don't necessarily have a degree in that subject, you're going to have to work even harder than somebody who does have a degree in maths, for example, or does have a degree in English.
Now, Sally, you've mentioned kind of some of the ways in which we can build subject knowledge, and that kind of brings me into the topic of kind of the routes and the pathways into teaching. Will you shine a light a little bit on some of the routes and the pathways that, if you've got listeners out there, or if some of our listeners who know people that want to go into the industry, what sort of routes can they take into teaching?
Absolutely. So we have the more academic routes, as I think we've talked about previously. This would be where you would get the PGCE qualification, so the postgraduate certificate in education, alongside QTS, qualified teacher status. Generally, they are provided by offered by universities or SCIT courses. So a SCIT course is a school centre training. They would be linked up with the university as well for the PGCE assignments. And with the PGCE assignments, you also get credits towards a master's, which you could then go on to complete. Generally, those courses are a tuition fee. Some schools might provide salary places, but it's quite rare. So you might get somebody in a primary school, for example, who's a fantastic TA, and the school might support them to do their teacher training and pay their fees for them. One route that's really effective if you've got fantastic people in your school already who have got their degree is the assessment only route, or the AO route, which is basically you would teach unqualified for 2 years. So we would see somebody in the school, maybe a DT technician or a great cover supervisor that you've got in your school, and they would do the assessment only route. They would teach for 2 years. They would have full responsibility for their classes. Now, the difficulty with this route is you'd be teaching a lot of hours. So it would be sort of 20 to 21 hours of teaching. It's a bit of a baptism of fire. Whereas with the skit route into teach training, you start off, it's a more gentle, some of the trainees might not think so, but it's a more gentle entry, I think, where you'd start off with between 4 and 8 hours a week, and you'd build up to a total of 16 hours by the end of your course. There is also, so with the assessment only route, you would get a salary on an unqualified teacher scale. The school would then support you. After 2 years, you'd go into a 12-week programme, where you'd gain QTS at the end of it if you were meeting all of the standards. There is also the apprenticeship route. I'm going to be completely honest. This is a route that I'm exploring currently. I don't know everything about this route. So my understanding is it's 4 school terms. That would be a year and a term. And in that term from the September to December, there would be an endpoint assessment. So you'd do a year of apprenticeship. Again, this is attractive to trainees. They're hoping for this route because it pays. It would provide a salary. It doesn't necessarily mean that you would get a job after training at a particular school, but you would come out of that with QTS and PGCE. The only problem with that one is schools might not go for it. So I recently had somebody who's looking to train in history ask me about the apprenticeship route in the hope of getting a salary. Well, we get so many history trainees on skip courses that I don't think schools would pay for somebody to train in history and do the apprenticeship route. On the flip side to that, I think schools need to consider it, because schools will already, if they employ a certain number of people, pay an apprenticeship levy. So it actually might be a way for the future. As I say, I just don't know enough about it. I'm exploring it at the moment and hoping to take a couple of, in discussion with the head teacher, hoping that we might be able to offer that route as, you know, a trial to see if it works.
No, absolutely. And I think you've mentioned really clearly there about this kind of the more or less academic routes, and the focus on pedagogy, I think, is a really important one when it comes to teacher training. And I think that's something that either some love in that training year, or some may think, actually, I just want to focus on my skill of teaching in the classroom. Now, is there kind of, what's your advice, Sally, on those who are kind of leaning more towards the PGCE? Are there certain things that you would suggest in those who want to go into the more practical with a kind of a higher timetable loading?
So what I find, for me, I think the skit route generally trumps any other route into teaching. So I did a PGCE myself many, many years ago at the University of Leicester. It was fabulous. And we had university days and we were on 2 placements. I favour the skit route because you're in school from day one. So September the 1st, all teachers go back for their teacher training days. You are a member of staff. You're there. The students see you. I absolutely love the skit route. I think it's the one that prepares you the most for teaching. It's a nice ease into teaching alongside getting that PGCE. And the PGCE is very attractive because it means you can teach worldwide. It's a worldwide recognised qualification. And obviously making up a year of your master's as well. So if you're into your research and you want to grab yourself a master's, you've already got a year under your belt. I've found that the assessment only route, which is QTS only, works really well for more mature people within the school. So DT technicians, people that have cover supervised for a number of years, maybe a career change, because you're fully responsible for your classes. You'd be on 20 hours a week. You'd be doing all of the data entry, planning all of the lessons, marking all of the work. It would be your responsibility. And I think the more mature trainees tend to favour that route, because the thought of going out and doing a uni day is, you know, they feel like they're past that. And I think we need to not be critical of that attitude as well. So I've spoken to assessment only route trainees who have attempted the skip route and found that it's a lot of young sort of 22-year-olds whinging about how hard it is teaching 4 hours a week. Now, when they've worked in industry and they've been under some real pressure, I think they've found that quite irksome, if I'm being honest. So I and there's nothing wrong with a good whinge on your PGCE year. You have to have your little gripes and your moans. But I think I've seen for those more mature trainees that they just want to get on with it. They just want to be teaching. They want to be qualified. So I think it's very much about the person as well. You'd need to speak to, if you're fresh out of university, the AO route might not be for you. But if you've been in cover supervising for 3-4 years and you've got all of the skills and you've shadowed a department, for example, then it might be that that is the choice for you. And I think you would have that discussion with a school that you're already working in. Or if you're a skit, you're straight fresh from uni, actually go to an open evening for the skit. Go and speak to somebody about the different routes and sit down and write your pros and cons list. I think there's no one size fits all, really.
Yeah, and that's important, isn't it? That actually there are so many routes into teaching, and actually there is so many options out there for those who do want to get into teaching. And in light of that, Sally, what sort of things can people do to train or to kind of prepare themselves before they go into the element of training? Now, if there are listeners out there or listeners who know people who are into kind of thinking about going into teaching, what could they do to prepare?
It's a great question, actually. So the first thing I would say, when applications are coming in, we're looking for people that have had recent experience in a school, particularly for people that are coming from industry and maybe haven't been to school themselves for 20 odd years. And I don't mean just a few days in a school. I mean either taking an extended placement during, so if you're at university and you have a really long summer ahead of you, you finish in May, your exams finish in May, get yourself on a school placement until the end of term. What's lovely about that is you'd get to experience life in the department. You could go around the school and get experience as well. You might even get to go on some trips and see the wider workings of the school. Another recommendation really would be to work as an LA or a cover supervisor for at least a year. Try the profession on, because you might realise that you really don't like children, and you don't want to be on a skit course where you're faced with a 9 grand debt and halfway through it you think, I hate children, they won't do as they're told, I'm not cut out for this, I don't have the subject knowledge. So I think definitely pre-prepare and get into schools and see what life is like in schools, because if you're training from sort of 20 years ago as well, schools are very different places now. So don't go on your own experience. We have, you know, I've seen and spoken to people who have said, oh, well, my teachers were all rubbish. I want to be better than them. And that's really not the attitude we're looking for. We're looking for people that recognise how hard teachers work and actually know the workings of a school in 2021.
I think that's important, isn't it? Knowing, I love the idea of trying it on, and the fact of that challenge of being in the classroom, that's a challenge that you're comfortable with. I think that's a really important part of it as well. And I think you've really struck a chord in how we think about those who do want to come into the profession and trying to identify those people. How about, Sally, if somebody wants to be a mentor, you get to see lots of mentors, and a good part of your job is kind of pairing up your mentors with those trainees. And how, what could you do if you wanted to be a mentor? How could you prepare? What sort of steps could you take before you actually just go in and take on that role? Maybe you've already been asked to take that role.
Yes. So from the professional tutor point of view, so I look after the mentors for current NQTs, which are going to move to the ECF and ECT programme. And I also look after the ITT mentors as well. And the thing that I have learned is that mentors come in all shapes and sizes. There are lots of different styles, and there's definitely no one right way. There's no perfect. There's only one way of doing it, and that's it. As far as I can, if I'm lucky enough to be part of the interview process, I will try and select a mentor and trainee combination which I know is the right combination. So if, for example, I've interviewed a really meticulous trainee, they've produced a brilliant lesson plan for the pupil activity that they've done, I wouldn't go pairing a really meticulous, organised trainee with a scatty mentor, because you're going to get those personality clashes. It's not always possible to get the perfect pairing, and sometimes you have to work with you know, what how it ends up, but as far as possible, try and pair the right mentor and right trainee. I think the best mentors are great communicators, people who love to nurture and develop. And obviously in teaching, you get a lot of people in the profession, so I'm never short of people that want to mentor. I think mentors really need to be confident. They also need to be reflective practitioners, and they also need to be a little bit altruistic. You have to give up a lot of your own time as a mentor, and that's the biggest time pressure on teachers, I think, time fitting everything in. You don't want to end up resenting your trainee and thinking, I wish I hadn't taken this on, because instead of delivering feedback every day after school, I could have been getting on with my work. I think being humble is really important as well. I've currently got an amazing trainee in English, and I learn as much from her as she does from me. And I am very grateful for that. I think that mentoring really pushes you to be a better, more reflective teacher. So an example that I'd like to give is that Esther, who's training in English with us, felt that her sixth form lesson was too lecture style. So we had a little feedback session, and together, I also am guilty of being very lecture style at sixth form, and sometimes that's appropriate, but we explored ways that we could increase interaction. So together we discussed the idea of student presentations, and Esther drew in her knowledge of a sixth form training session that she'd had recently. And we also looked at the idea of speed dating, so students being in charge of a specific bit of information and doing a speed dating activity where they had to share that that information with other students in a creative, innovative way. So I think as a mentor, you know, it's that idea of pushing yourself to be a better teacher, reflecting on your own practice as well as the practice of your trainee.
And it's interesting, isn't it, actually being the role of a mentor makes you far, well, as you've mentioned, it kind of pushes that reflective practice that you've mentioned. And it's kind of getting that balance of being supportive yet providing the right challenges for your trainees. Can you say a little bit about that? Because a trainee coming in September is very different to a trainee who leaves that course or enters into the 6 weeks holiday. What does that look like? And what are some of the steps you take from the beginning of the year into the latter end of the year?
That's a really interesting question, isn't it? So I think you move more into a coaching role as you go through. Initially, you're probably going to be giving a lot of instructions on how to do things. And I think one of the really important things is tailoring that feedback. So making sure right at the beginning of the year that you're offering lots of praise for the really small things. Your trainee might start just by delivering a starter activity or just by delivering a main. And when they start getting to delivering a full lesson, we could, and I'm sure we could do it with our own practice, even as experienced teachers, pull apart everything. And you find that the best trainees, when you ask them to reflect on their lesson, want to tell you all the negatives first. Well, I could have done this and I should have done that. And that's really not conducive, I think. And it's always important as a mentor to say, no, let's start with the positives. Let's pick out what you did really well, even if it is just that you opened the door, you greeted the students on arrival, you got them in, and you made them feel safe and welcome. If the rest of the lesson fell apart because the subject knowledge wasn't there, we focus on the praise. And I think one of the key things as a mentor is to make sure that you're only offering two, maybe three areas for development per lesson. You don't want to overwhelm your trainee. Obviously, as you come towards the end, so this time of year, the trainee is beginning to take responsibility, perhaps not just for thinking lesson by lesson, but they're thinking the whole scheme of work. They're thinking, this is going to be the assessment. What steps do I put in place for the student to get there? And you move more from an instructional, do this, do this, do this, to a coaching. Well, have you explored? Have you thought about this?
It's really, and it's quite nice to see that progression and see that trainee grow when you do give those small steps that lead them into being such a confident teacher towards the end of it. And sometimes that journey isn't always so smooth sailing, Sally. So how do we support trainees who may not be able, who may are struggling? I mean, I know we always have the success stories, but is there any advice for mentors who may have struggled or are struggling? How do we overcome some of those hurdles, especially if our trainees are really struggling to take that feedback?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think my advice would be always try and meet face to face, particularly if you've got some tricky feedback to provide, because in emails, things can get lost in translation. So make time for each other, show that you care, that you want to be mentored, that you want to, if you're the trainee, that you want to be there and you want to listen. And if you're the mentor, that you want to give that time. I think it's very important as well for the trainees to remember that we tackle things objectively, not taking feedback personally. We have all had stinkers of lessons. We've all had that situation where SLT have come in on a corridor drop and it's just gone horrendously wrong. So again, that idea of being humble, people who choose to mentor, generally, you know, they're not bullies. I don't think I've ever met somebody that wanted to mentor to be nasty or crawl or take somebody down. So I think trainees need to remember that their mentor is, their, in a sense, their friend, but a critical friend. Somebody that will pick out, you need to improve this, but will tackle it objectively. I think that you need to have an understanding as well that the trainee will want to impress the mentor. So I think definitely making sure that the praise is there, always looking for that positive, not overwhelming. And if necessary, sitting down with that trainee and putting in an action plan. Mentors need to remember within the school, they're not alone. There should be a professional tutor that oversees. They could also, it depends on what the problem is with the trainee. Are they struggling with their behaviour management? Are they struggling with their teaching and learning? Because you can send them to experts in the school to go and do observations or to speak to the behaviour management lead, for example. So I think that is a real, you know, depends on what the issue is.
Absolutely. And this idea that there are many experts within the school, that it's not just your sole responsibility. And actually, it's a community, isn't it? If we're relying on our community to support, then actually it's really important to be that supportive measure for everybody involved. And whilst that feedback, like you've mentioned, can feel personal, it isn't. It's there as a supportive measure. Tell us a little bit about kind of the local impact there of teacher recruitment. So we've looked at kind of all the aspects when it comes to teacher training, but locally for us, I shall say, you know, a little shout out to Milton Keynes there. What's our kind of impact at the moment?
So, you know, I think we need to look at the local pressures on recruitment. Milton Keynes is quite an expensive place to live. And I think for people that want to retrain, it's very difficult to leave a job with no bursary attached, who, you know, will still have bills to pay, rent or mortgage, etc., coming out each month. And a year of no salary is very difficult. So we're finding that we're getting our cohorts are sort of younger, fresh from university trainees, now looking at a job market because of lockdown, where they think, not sure what I can go into. There aren't many options. So those fresh from university who perhaps can live back at home, who, the only problem with this is it might seem like a step backwards, but if they can live at home for a year rent free, I think we're then, I'm really keen to train people who want to stay and live and work in Milton Keynes. And it really breaks my heart when you get trainees that then decide to move further up the country where cost of living is cheaper. So I think that there's lots that can be done. I'm not sure in the sort of 15 years that I've worked in and around Milton Keynes that these initiatives will be put in place, but I think we do need some key worker initiatives. When I first moved to Milton Keynes, I, you know, teacher training was in a very different state. I got a key worker flat, which gave me reduced rents. I got a golden hello into the profession. So I was very lucky. I think one of the other pressures in terms of Milton Keynes is that we're attracting fresh from university, but that's hard to do in Milton Keynes because we don't have our own university to do careers fairs at. We really rely on schools nurturing former students like yourself, Mira. And, you know, that's becoming more and more important, that your talent spot in your sick form and you plant that seed. I think you'd make an excellent teacher. When you're at university, come back in the summer term and do a bit of work experience with us. I think in terms of Milton Keynes, the assessment only route has been very attractive, particularly at our school, where you spot the talent within school. There's a fantastic cover supervisor who you think, yeah, they could take it on. Or you can try it on, you know, come in, do a couple of days a week and then a couple of days a week of cover souping and you can see how they get on. But But I do think there are pressures across the country as well. It's not just Milton Keynes with our shortage subjects. As I say, we never fill maths, chemistry, computing. One of the good things about Milton Keynes, don't want to be all doom and gloom, is that generally at the Tommy Flowers skit, we get 100% employment rate. And this is because Milton Keynes is growing. So we're getting new schools. We've got a growing population. So I think that the future is bright. If you can get through that training year, there are definitely brilliant opportunities in Milton Keynes.
And it's really looking at that national landscape, but also the local impact, and really considering what's right for you in that stage of your career, but also thinking about, I know I had that conundrum of, do I kind of live in London and train there and do that, or do I come back and kind of come back and make my life a little bit easier? And actually, my life was a little bit more easy on that day to day. And I think they're kind of decisions that we have to be really honest about. So thank you so much for shining a light on it.
Oh,
we've had lovely comments. So Amy Green, you've mentioned, she said, I love mentoring out of my department this year. I've learned so many new strategies to use in my lessons from my mentee. So again, it can be really fruitful. We've had another listener who said that I did my PGCE and really enjoyed it. From a subject specific focus, it is unrivaled. I now work in a school with an extensive skip program, and our teachers are more prepared for the classroom than I was, but with a poorer induction to the subject discipline. So again, that imbalance between kind of subject knowledge to practical, there's kind of that balance that we need to get really on, well, as a good balance, really a healthy one.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, thank you so much for your time today, Sally.
Thank you for inviting me.
Well, I've thoroughly enjoyed it. And I know that our listeners have gained so much from this conversation. And it's something that you can share with your departments and have people listen into if they are ever unsure when it comes to anything to do with training or mentorship. So thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.
And have a lovely rest of your Saturday.
Thanks very much. You too.
So we are going to be linking into our news bulletin for today, as well as, I don't know if you already know this, but it would be lovely for you to be joining in on our competition, looking at the future of education. I'll give you our news for today so you have a little insight into what it is, what's happening, and then we'll go into our fabulous competition. Or actually, should we do the competition first? Let's do the competition first.
Do you have something to say about the future of education? Maybe you have some positive ideas about the way things could or should be in the future. Then enter our Teachers Talk Radio competition. Submit a 10-minute video presentation to us by 22nd of May, presenting your ideas about the future of education, and you could win £50. Our host team will select 5 winners who will each win £50 and have their video feature at a high-profile education event. To enter, simply send your video entry to teacherstalkradio@gmail.com with the subject line TTR Competition. We will announce the 5 winners after 22nd of May on Teachers Talk Radio live.
So you have till the 22nd of May to submit those videos. We'd love to see your videos. We'd love to see what you've got there to showcase for us. I think it's really important that we are sharing our voice and what you kind of envision for the future of education. Now, just looking at the time there, it would be lovely to get to our next guest. I will save the news bulletin, if that's okay with our listeners, for the end of the show, so we can do a nice little roundup and an information of what has been happening this week. We do have Esther Johnson, who is going to be our second guest for today. She's gone through her training year in a lockdown, people, in a lockdown, can I just remind you? So it's been quite a journey, shall I say. It'd be really interesting to hear how that has been for Esther, but also to understand what does it look like? So she will be going into 2 years in her NQT year. So that again is a change from, you know, from the past. Esther graduated from a BSc in English language last year. Again, phenomenal. She's opted for the local skip route, and as mentioned by Sally, instead of the university route. So it'd be nice to get a first-hand experience as to why Esther has chosen that particular route and why she wanted to go into teaching for today. She has chosen to be an English and media trainee at Oak Grove School and secured her permanent position. So it's all looking very exciting for Esther. And I feel very naughty because it's like we've all been marrying up the picture when it comes to looking at that national picture for today, but also kind of the local impact that we're having on our I'm sorry there, Sally. Absolutely. ECT, early careers teacher. I keep saying that, don't I? Instead of NQT, I get so used to it. But I hope that Esther's going to be bringing in that lovely perspective that it's now just developing and changing into this, and it's evolving. This process is evolving. So I'm very excited to have Esther in today. She is going to shine a light on her experience, what it was like to be teaching remotely from home, which is fabulous. So good morning there, Esther. Oh dear, we've just had a little bit of a technical issue there, which is not a problem. We can sort this out. It's not an issue at all. It would be nice to hear any kind of comments and queries while we are just connecting with Esther of your experiences as a trainee. I know we had Leanne mention that she was spending her money all on her resources, which is a shame that you were spending all your money on those resources. It'd be lovely to hear, Esther, what your particular experience was of training, and how did that shape you as a teacher? How did that shape you as a teacher now? Maybe some of those experiences are particularly prominent in the way that you are. Maybe that shaped you as a mentor or a mentee. So yeah, please do call in. It'll be fantastic to have you sharing those, your experiences. Let me get Esther into the studio. Let me see where she is. Fabulous. So while we are waiting for Esther to join us, I would like to just play for you our news bulletin. Hopefully you're able to... Oh, I think we have Esther here. I've just called her in. So let's get Esther in. Sorry, it's all a bit of a muddle this morning. Let's have Esther in this morning. Good morning, Esther.
Good morning, Mary. Good morning. Sorry about that. Technical difficulties.
No worries at all. No worries at all. So tell us then.
How are you?
I'm good this morning. How are you this morning?
I'm good. A lovely grey morning, but nevertheless, see what you
got. Absolutely. Well, let's just kickstart this off then this morning. Tell us why you wanted to be a teacher.
Great. So why did Esther want to become a teacher? For many reasons, really, many reasons. I would say my number one reason was because I definitely looked up to my teachers when I was in school. My favourite, I'm not sure if this is a bit cliche or something, but my favourite teachers were my teachers, especially to my two English teachers, Mrs. Broad and Mrs. Brown. They were definitely inspirational to me. They were those teachers who would help me, not just with my studies, but with just life things as well. They would always be the ones who me and my friends can go to, should we have any questions, if we have any, problems with other subjects or with other teachers. Those were the teachers who were quite stable in my life. And they were the ones who actually, I talked about in my personal statement when I was applying for university. They were the ones who I talked about my sixth person when I was applying for the skit. So yeah, definitely, because I was inspired by some of my other teachers.
And sorry there, Esther. When you started to look into teaching, I believe that you had to do a presentation. Will you tell us a little bit about this presentation? Because I've heard it's incredibly inspiring.
Honestly, so when I applied for the skit that that Sally was talking about earlier, Sally was actually one of the people who interviewed me for the skit, and the task was to give a presentation on what makes a good school. In this presentation, I said many things. I said, some more common things like good leadership, rules and regulations, a safe environment. But then I also said something. I also said that what's really important, what makes a school good and outstanding, is that it adopts and it appreciates multiculturalism, and it understands that the society we live in, or the city that we live in, is quite diverse. We're really lucky in Milton Keynes, where we have quite a diverse population. I wouldn't say our schools are quite segregated. We do have a lovely mix within our schools, and I feel like our teaching, as good schools, teachers to reflect the community. So if you have a school that's quite diverse, that has a lot of different ethnic minorities, a large community of whatever culture, and I feel like there should be a teacher who they can look up to, a teacher who can sort of represent that, someone who will be able to champion them should they have any problems, or someone they can go to, they can talk to and relate to about stuff like that. And I think that's what makes a good school, because not only they wouldn't just have, say for example, if it's if it's Ramadan or it is Black History Month, you're going to see like one theme, something's themed in the canteen. You're not going to have maybe just one assembly on it. But there could be a teacher there who's going to champion it, who's going to educate the school about it more, can educate other staff about it. And I think that's what makes a good school.
And it's about that kind of enrichment of that inclusivity. And I think you really touched a really strong chord there in light of bringing that inclusive voice and providing a really rich fabric to the school community. And I think that's a really lovely thing that you've mentioned there. Now, what has been your experience, Esther, of your training year? Should we dive into that one, from remote teaching all the way through getting them back into the classroom and making sure that we've kind of kept our 2 meter distance? We're making sure our desks are wiped down and every surface area is kind of sanitized to the nth degree. What's your experience? Shine a light for our lovely listeners this morning.
Training in a pandemic has been tumultuous, just to say the least. It's been ups and there's been downs. In September, when sort of the pandemic was raging, things seemed at least a bit normal. We were able to go within 2 meters of students. We were able to, within a certain range, we were able to sort of walk around the classroom a bit more. And then, of course, remote learning hit, remote teaching hit, and that was a crazy time to be in. It was really weird for me, hopping out of bed each morning and logging onto the computer, talking to students via Google Meet, setting work, delivering work via PowerPoints, and not having that face-to-face interaction with students, which is something I loved and noticed. The main reason I got into the profession is because I like to talk to students and I like to work with students. I like to work with kids, and they're really funny sometimes. The stuff they come up with is just hilarious. And not having that really hurt my training in the sense that I felt that I wasn't getting the fun out of the job, the pure fun of speaking to other students and things like that. So it's really hard to learn how to teach online. But on the other hand, I still learned lots of really, really good sort of tips and tricks on how to teach online. Lots of good tools I was using to help me teach. There was Notes, which I used to give, it's a Google extension, which I used to give students verbal feedback, as opposed to me typing all the time. I can actually give students verbal feedback as to what I was saying or what I was saying to them. So, you did this really well in your assessment, but you can also improve this. And then I sort of gave my Year 8 students a Google form study, or a sort of form, to ask them if they liked it or not, just ask them if they liked to make. And 80% of the students said yes, they did like it, and they prefer verbal feedback. So that kind of helped my team in the essence, because it taught me that while students do appreciate written feedback because they can get back to it, but then they also like verbal feedback as well. So now I'm making the effort to always provide verbal feedback as where possible. So while, you know, remote teaching was very hard, waking up every morning and logging onto my Google Meet with my computer, it was really good because it taught me different techniques. So then from there, we were sort of dropped back into the classroom, and I sort of had to learn how to be a teacher again, learn how to be an in-person teacher again. I had to learn, you know, how to body language again, how to have a presence in the classroom, how to use my voice and so forth. So it's been a roller coaster ride, but I feel like I've learned how to be flexible. I've learned how to adapt to my situation in a way that I don't think it could have happened should the pandemic not have raged.
And that's really interesting. There's such a rich amount of tools that we're learning, isn't it, as teachers? And I think you've really shone a light on kind of us upskilling through use of different Absolutely. Platforms and different kind of various tools that have helped to sharpen our teaching practice through such different environments. And it's really lovely to hear kind of how we've tried to reintegrate, especially in training, where you're trying to still meet your teaching standards, make sure you've got it all in the folder, but also really want to kind of learn as much as possible so that you're really prepared going into what life, well, we don't really know what it's going to look like in September too much, but hopefully it's one in which that we feel a little bit more normal, shall I say.
Yeah.
So you've shown a lot of kind of what you've learnt there, Esther. Do you feel like you've missed out on anything in particular, or anything that you're really kind of wanting to challenge yourself with when it comes to your teaching practice for September?
Absolutely. I feel like So I feel like I said, I've learned how to be flexible and adaptive, you know, in essence. I feel like all of us, all teachers in the teaching industry have done so far, because we're sort of looking at the moon, thinking what boards are going to say one evening, how's it going to affect us tomorrow, things like that. So I think being adaptive and being flexible is a skill that I've definitely upskilled, I've definitely built on. I feel like as an English teacher, I can understand that students may not always appreciate, you know, reading books. So they may not always appreciate Shakespeare. They may not always appreciate reading Animal Farm and so forth. So when I came in to teach, and I thought, yeah, I'm going to use lots of drama in my classroom. We're going to be up, moving around, have music in there. You know, the typical enthusiasm for a trainee. And then coming in September, seeing, you know, chairs and tables separating to rows, all students having their eyes ahead and bodies all facing me. I felt as if we wouldn't be able to have that sort of drama in the class. We wouldn't be able to move around, things like that and so forth. So I haven't really had the opportunity to practice my sort of classroom management skills of me managing like a class with drama in it, or a class where students are maybe going around the school for some sort of research class. And I feel like in September, you know, hopefully by the grace of God, that everything is going to be a bit more normal, where we can move around in classes, we can do a bit more group work. I hope that I'll be able to develop the skills of managing students in that sense, managing behaviour, where I can sort of have to keep an eye on their students at once, and are they all working in a group, are they on task and so forth. So I think just having students, just keeping an eye on students is something that I would like to do. Like just to have them just sat down and literally the whole hour or whatnot.
And that's interesting, because it's about that, the physicality of teaching, like the idea of the bodies in the room and how do we manage that with the different activities, because we've been so still behind screens. But actually that in itself is something, is a core part of us as teachers, and thinking about where we are, our presence in the room, using our voice, our facial expressions through a face mask, maybe.
Exactly. Sometimes they think I have sort of a mask on, standard of front, and I might say, guys, come on, I'm being serious now, but they don't understand it unless they can see your whole face. We have to be really excessive with your eyebrow use, you know, so like the campy advert, yeah.
Excessive use of eyebrows, which we use as a feedback strategy for sure. So Esther, where do you see yourself in 5 years? This is like the first steps within your teaching practice, but where do you see yourself in 5 years? What will Esther be looking like, or where will she be?
Where will Esther be in 5 years? Well, I think Sally will be happy to hear that I will, you know, hopefully still be in Milton Keynes. That is the plan. Hopefully, you know, still at Oakgrove or any other school in Milton Keynes. But what I would like to start developing my practice on and developing myself as a teacher on is either going two routes. It would either be more towards leadership roles. I'm quite involved in, I like the school care. So I'm currently mentoring since October, so since my 1 month into my training, I've been mentoring a year 9 girl. So I do enjoy the sort of pastoral role of teaching, in the sense that I enjoy, you know, helping students and helping develop outside of academics. So I would love to continue with some mentoring, maybe leadership roles. That includes the head of year or some sort, I'm not sure, whatever that takes me down. But I also have a great interest in educational research as well. I remember when I was writing my dissertation for my final year of university, this time last year, the time I had been, I really, really enjoyed writing my dissertation. I really enjoyed doing the research, writing it, conducting writing methodology section, thinking about how am I going to do this investigation, and then actually doing it and receiving results. I found it really, really satisfying and really, really informative in myself, and say, oh, I can do an experiment, I could do an investigation, writing up. It was really nice to do that. So perhaps doing something more with educational research, finding more about pedagogy and different pedagogical practices and what's effective, what's not, what technology in schools is effective, what technology is sort of bit redundant. Are PowerPoints still useful? Are they not useful? Things like that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think we do reassess our tools given our current situation and current experiences. So that's really interesting there. Thank you very much for shining a light on that. Now give our listeners those final kind of top tips that you would suggest for any listeners who are encouraging people to get into the profession? What would you suggest? Any top tips that you've got?
I would say just be 100% realistic with them and tell them, inform them of the year that they're getting into. Because I would say that if I was not as informed of the type of year that the NQT, the ICT year is going to be, I would have found it a lot harder. But because when I went to my interview, I had Sally interviewed me, and Sally was the one who convinced me or motivated me to go more towards the skit practice. I had told her that I did have an interview for other places, and I did receive offers from the other places. Also, like Gull University or GCL, the IOE. When I went to university, it's where I wanted to go. And then the interview with Sally, she just told me, she just told me that it's going to be a really difficult year. I said the importance of sort of living at home, you know, where I can have my parents here with me, they can support me, have a family network, or they could come home and dinner will be ready, things like that. She just sort of made it really real to me that this year is going to be really hard, and that you're going to need a sort of support network around you, and there's going to be times where you're going to be really down. You're going to need more of a support. So I would say just be really, really real with the trainees and let them know that this year is going to be really tough, but you're going to survive. Like, you are going to get through it, and there's always people around you who can help. So just tell them. Just be completely honest with them how difficult the year is going to be.
Absolutely. And what do you feel like when it comes to finding the right space for you, finding the right job for you, or finding the right school for you? What's your feedback on that? What's your kind of experience and process?
So that's really good, actually. I would say I recently came up for my second placement, where I spent a week observing in another school. So I feel that it was really important for me to do that observation, because that school was quite different to the school I'm at now. And it just sort of gives me an idea of what kind of school I'd like to teach, or what school I would like to work in, what school maybe I would like to work in one day if my practice is more developed, or a stronger teacher. But luckily, you know, thank goodness, I've been staying at Oak Grove. I've been staying there for the times to come. I've been offered a lovely job at Oak Grove. So I think it's really important that you find out what school you want to be in. It's all about the ethos of the school. You know, Oak Grove's ethos is mainly based on respect, and I'll say that really aligns with one of my own personal ethos as well. So if you are sort of looking at schools, what school you want to work at, what is their ethos, what do they believe in, what is their focus on, is it academics, or is it sort of building students to be a good citizen for the future? And I feel like Oak Grove's a lovely mix between those two, and that's why I was happy to accept the job at Oak Grove.
Well, that's really interesting. I think it's important to understand like the community roles of schools. And I think you kind of shone a light at that through Sally's conversation, but also through yours. And that's a really lovely insight there from yourself there, Esther. Thank you very much for joining us this morning. I'm so happy that you have. I know it's a bit of a technical hitch, but we got there in the end. And it's lovely to hear.
Always succeed,
no. Absolutely. And I think it's really lovely to get a perspective that shines a light on the kind of the trials and tribulations of training in a pandemic. So thank you so much for this morning. I hope you have a lovely Saturday.
Oh, thank you, Ray. You too. Thank you for having me on. I feel honoured. Thank you.
No worries at all. Take care, Esther.
And you too. Bye-bye. Have a good weekend.
So you've heard a lovely little segment there from Esther in light of her training year in a lockdown, in a pandemic, and learning all the fabulous things that we do and have done, but also some of the challenges that creep up in that moment too. Now, before we get Rebecca Catmer on the show, I do want to share that new segment with you. So here it is.
This is Teachers Talk Radio, and this is Teachers Talk Radio News with Sebastian Sagnier.
I am Sebastian Sagnier, and this is Teachers Talk Radio with the news. The First Lady Jill Biden will be welcoming students across America to the nation's capital in a virtual trip to Washington, D.C. It is the latest virtual trip produced by Discovery Education, a global edtech leader. The Shadow's Child Poverty Minister, Wes Streeting, has warned that the government will face the impact of what he called recent grotesque school budget cuts. He also revealed he is undergoing treatment for kidney cancer. The popular Netflix show, Sex Education, is rumoured to be aired this June or July. This comes at a time of much discussion over the government's new RSE curriculum that is now compulsory for all schools. This is Teachers Talk Radio, and that was the news with me, Sebastian Zagnia.
So there you have your new segment for this weekend. You do just remind yourselves that you do have a fantastic lineup for the rest of the day before we do get Becca Catmore into the show. On your Saturday brunch, you've got Amy Ferguson, and that's from 11 till 12:30. You also have on your Saturday lunch show with Tom Hopkins Burke from 1 till 2:30. So do stay with us for today. Don't feel like you're leaving us, please. We'd like to have you here joining us on these fantastic conversations. So please stay with us. Please stick with us. We love having you here. Now, just to give you a little bit of background then on our final final guest for today, it is Rebecca Catmer, who had at once upon a time worked at Oak Grove School. You're seeing a common trend here, aren't you? A common theme here, not to say too much. But now has relocated to Shropshire. She's known to be a teacher of geography, and that'll be interesting given Sally's conversation really kind of at the beginning of the show. But we'll soon be going into the position of head of geography, which would be really interesting given she had entered into the profession and kind of taken on the leadership role very quickly. So it'd be nice to get the kind of her experiences aired today. Training in Milton Keynes, it has been quite something for Rebecca to have led her to go into that position of head of department. But also Rebecca has had that industry experience. So again, we get to have that lovely insight there today. Rebecca wants to shine a light on also her love of her research projects, both with UCL and Teacher Toolkit. So I'm very excited to have Becca on the show this morning. We are waiting for Becca to call in whenever she's ready. I am more than happy for whenever you're ready, Becca. And I think the more insight that we have, the better. So here we have Becca this morning. Thank you very much for joining us this morning, Miss Catmer.
Hi, good morning.
Thank you very much for joining us on this fabulous Saturday morning.
A little bit drizzly here. I don't know how it is for you.
Oh, absolutely. It's definitely drizzly here for sure. So let's kickstart this fantastic segment on your kind of experiences. But also, should we start with kind of what made you go into teaching? Because you do have, and you did have that industry experience, and you made that transition into teaching.
Yeah, no, definitely. It was a really, really odd one because when I was a kid, I always used to play teachers in my bedroom, but never kind of envisioned myself being a teacher growing up. You know, you do those kind of retail jobs, and I was really lucky to work for people like Apple. And it was actually prior to teaching, I was working in the railway industry, which is a really odd transition. And I was part of management in that, which was great and it was brilliant. But you kind of get back to that point in life where you don't feel very fulfilled. And I realised quite early on that I kind of didn't have that happiness and joy from my work that I was spending majority of my time doing, if that makes sense.
No, absolutely. And I think you've pointed out actually having a change in that career path can be quite a daunting thing, and it can sometimes be quite a nerve-wracking process. What made you go into teaching? What was the thing that kind of thought, yeah, do you know what, I want to transition, I want to kind of move into teaching now?
Well, I think the big thing for me is I think you've got to listen to the people around you. And I was having those conversations with family, like, you know, what have you seen me happy doing? And in my gap year, I was really lucky to be able to go and teach in Bangladesh for about 4 or 5 months. And it was that that people said, that was the only time we've seen you alive and buzzing. And I thought, well, there's got to be something in this. So I got in contact with the Tommy Flowers Skit, who were incredible from the word go. And 2016 was when I started my ICT year with them, completed my PGCE. So for me, it was that kind of realisation that as adults and as children, we're happy, or the most happiest, I believe, when we're learning and we're growing. And I think if you're doing that in your job, and if you've got the opportunity to do that in your job every day, then surely you're going to be fulfilled and happy in your work. So it kind of became a no-brainer that worked out really, really well. So yeah, 2016 was when I started, which feels like yesterday.
Like a lifetime away, shall we say.
It does, though, sometimes.
And so what was your NQT experience like then? Because you had your NQT experience, but you also were in that process of going for those leadership roles, and kind of what motivated that for you?
Do you know what, my NQT experience was probably the most rewarding and supportive experience I think I've had in a career to date. I was so, so lucky. You know, I was at placement at Oak Grove and I had a second placement at a school called Hayley. And Sally, funnily enough, was incredibly supportive throughout. And I think having mentors in the school that have become lifelong friends has just been the best aspect of your NQT. You know, they've been there when it's been the most challenging. You know, it is hard work being an NQT. You have to stand on your own 2 feet in a classroom, and time management and planning of lessons is really on your shoulders. But to have people around you that support you and to celebrate those successes when they go well, and trust me, there are so many successes, was just the most rewarding thing. But yeah, like you said, I had the opportunity to progress quite quickly. And funnily enough, I'd gone to second in department to start with as a job, and kind of had the understanding that perhaps I wasn't going to be successful, but thought, no, I'll throw caution to the wind and I'll go for it anyway. And I got some fantastic feedback from mentors and from senior leadership, which then encouraged me that when the head of department came up, probably around the kind of February time of 2018, I think it must have been, that I went to head of department and was successful. And I don't think I wouldn't have been able to do it if I didn't have that opportunity for like incredible feedback and support and realistic advice from people around me that I trusted.
And how did you find being head of department so early on in your career? How did you find managing that role?
I mean, it definitely helped having previous manager experience, don't get me wrong, but that really helped. And I was managing quite a significantly sized team, which included senior leadership. So that was really daunting. But do you know what? I think being able to, the most difficult thing, I think, was trying to kind of still people's cautions. I think people kind of were understandably cautious about the fact that you've got such a new teacher, a young teacher, coming in and leading a department of incredibly experienced staff. You're talking to staff with 15 years experience on you. So proving myself and believing in what I was doing was something that was really important. And I had to establish that from the get-go, kind of having confidence in my belief and trying to get staff to buy into what I was doing and actually see the purpose of what I was doing. But it was just such an incredible opportunity. You know, it's an opportunity for you to learn, listen to the people around you, listen to senior leadership, and then explain to your staff kind of the rationale behind what you are doing, why you want to change the scheme of work, why it is that you think it's really important to sweat the small stuff and get everything right at foundation level. And I think eventually, you know, I had some incredible support from the word go, but even some people that were understandably cautious, with time, they kind of bought into what you were doing.
And you know, it's important that you kind of mention in regards to communicating those ideas and building those real kind of open channels for communication. Do you feel that's something that came quite naturally to you when you were in that position of head of department? Or do you think that was something that you had to really work upon? Kind of what are some of those challenges that you found?
Well, as you can probably tell, I can speak for England, so communication is not an issue for me. I think with everything with teachers, you have to understand the fundamentals that time is precious in every aspect. So whenever you go to hold a meeting, whenever you're going to use a member of your team's time, there has to be a clear rationale behind it and it has to be purposeful. So I think first of all, just planning in meetings at times or communication with staff when it's convenient is really important. But I think also face-to-face, obviously with lockdown, it's much, much harder to achieve that, but face-to-face communication and just almost being like being an adult ultimately and having those difficult conversations with staff face-to-face is one of the most important things, I think. And as a well-managed time, as a taking on board feedback and finding ways to communicate, you know, quite difficult decisions at times to your staff, and even at times when you know that people are going to resist what you're offering, it's about getting them to buy in and you know, give it a go, and that's a difficult thing in management, is making sure that people understand why they are doing what they're doing, and even if they don't want to do it, you've kind of got to just encourage them anyway.
And it's really looking at that bigger picture, isn't it? Sometimes it's like really kind of opening up that bigger picture. And while that bigger picture might be something very different from what some people are used to, like you've mentioned, it's about building that trust and building that open line for communication, as you've mentioned before. Now, have you found any ways of what have you used to support your own development? Have you used any resources, tools, courses in particular? Share with us.
Oh, gosh. Oh, I've been so lucky. And one piece of advice I would give to any new teacher is just take every single opportunity, no matter how big or small, because it has been fundamental to my career in teaching. In terms of CPD, obviously in-house CPD in your school, there's so much on offer. And even if it's online courses, just get yourself involved. Get yourself involved in networks. Lockdown's been amazing in building communication online between schools. So get yourself on those social media groups. You know, Twitter is a massive one. Get yourself involved with online courses, because that just in like a school local based level will really help shape your teaching and the teaching of others around you. But in terms of other training, you know, as you previously mentioned, I was incredibly lucky to be one of, I think it was 16 teachers chosen across the UK to work with University College London and Teacher Toolkit on a verbal feedback project, which is feedback that is, you know, I think it's fundamental in the classroom. And it all was around trying to encourage communication between teachers and students to provide feedback and improve progress. And that was just absolutely fantastic. And in my current school, I mean, where do I start? I'm now working on something called Architects of Change, which is a trust-wide project for a couple of years, which is looking at certain aspects of CPD, or teaching, and we're looking at effective communicators, and I'm looking at working with some really strong literacy leads on how we can build communication with students to improve progress and outcomes. I'm currently heading up and leading eco-schools, which is something that's really, really close to my heart, and making sure that we get involved with all of these new ideas that have come forward. A great one for teachers is, at the minute, blue pizza badges are out, so get students involved in making pledges to get these blue pizza badges. I can't remember, I think there's something else that's completely gone from my mind.
Well, where do you ever breathe? Do you ever have a time to breathe?
I'm like Mira.
It feels like your timetable is jam-packed and you've got so much going on there. And one of the things I was just thinking while you're speaking is, whilst we can engage in, and this is the kind of conundrum with kind of research-based practices, being open to so many ideas, but then how do we get to implement them? Like, how do we get to implement them department-wide? How are you finding that journey?
I think that's like the hardest thing is finding the balance, because I'm one of those people that will throw myself in 110% for something, and sometimes that can be at the detriment of myself and others, because you don't end up managing your time well and you're not realistic with the outcome. So I think in terms of giving it as a department level, it's about, again, factoring and planning in that time for you to be able to communicate your ideas. So I've done many kind of whole school and department level CPD sessions where you're kind of sharing best practice and ultimately modelling the ideas that you've taken on board and learned. Because I think, like with students, if you can model something, then you're more likely to be able to kind of embed it in your teaching practice and see the success of it. But also as well that, you know, I'm currently, there's a conference coming up in July that I'm leading on a segment with. To do with communication. And again, that comes with planning in that time and making sure that teachers can set aside time to absorb what you're saying and to really reflect and see how that fits in with their practice.
And have you found a good balance from that work life? I know I did a whole wellness kind of well-being segment last weekend. How do you find implementing that work-life balance? Do you find that's something that you're still mastering? You can be totally honest. Or do you think you've mastered it? You're like, I've got it down. I've got this.
Sometimes I feel like, yeah, I've got this, I've nailed it, like this weekend I'm not going to do any work, which is like amazing. Yeah, there are times where you do feel like it's 6 o'clock, why am I still at work? But I think, do you know what, I think it comes to the team around you. You know, if you can communicate with your colleagues and say, this is what's on my plate,
they'll come in and check on you. So when you're completely engrossed in something, they'll be the ones that will pull you out of that kind of path that you've gone down of kind of self-destruction and not looking after your well-being, to kind of bring you back to reality. Be like, well, you know, is this helping you right now? So I think colleague support has been so, so great in terms of helping well-being. But yeah, I mean, I've got an NQT that I'm mentoring, and I'm just saying to them right now, you know, you've got to find a work-life balance. Be understanding that your NQT year and your IQT year are going to be the hardest in terms of managing that. But after that, you've got to have a life, because ultimately you work so that you can live, and you've got to make sure that you actually have a life outside of the classroom, or else you're going to be burnt out. And we all know what it's like when you've got a class of students that are burnt out.
And you're just not an effective teacher when you are burnt out, and you want to kind of nourish yourself before you can nourish somebody else.
Exactly. That's such true words.
So it's so lovely to hear that, that actually your rise to leadership has been kind of challenging, but yet something that's definitely achievable. What would you say as kind of top tips for people who do want to enter into those leadership roles? Kind of what can they do to prepare? I know you've mentioned being on courses, but is there anything else that you would provide as advice for our listeners?
I always think about this, and as I was listening to the show, I was like, oh, what would my top tips be? And I think I've nailed it for kind of three ideas.
Go on.
I think the first one for me is you've got to be real. You've got to be you. Like, you cannot fake being a teacher. So just show it. Let your personality shine in the classroom, and your colleagues and students will respect that, and your craft will grow. Kind of as a result of that. So for me, relationships are everything, and if you want to progress, in my opinion, you need to build that as a complete fundamental to your teaching. The second thing is passion. You know, if you can encourage students to see the purpose of what they're learning, particularly in times when there's so much distraction, then that's going to excite and engage them. And I think in terms of leadership growth, it's the same with colleagues. If you can get colleagues to see the purpose of their role and how it fits into the bigger picture of your school or of your trust, then they're going to get on board and buy into it. And the final one, I think, is, again, this could be detrimental to well-being at times, but just take opportunities, no matter how big or how small. You know, it's going to be the most challenging time, and you have to mentally prepare yourself for that, but it will be the most rewarding, trust me. And you'll see things about yourself that you didn't even realise.
And it's important.
That would be my top tip.
I love that. No, I love that. And I think it's like you've mentioned, taking those challenges, but also finding that really fine balance between work and life, but knowing when there is an opportunity, that take it, because actually it could be of your real benefit, and you don't know what can come out of opportunities.
Exactly. No, you really don't.
So thank you so much for this morning. It's been so lovely having you on the show and kind of thinking about that kind of rise to leadership and what that looks like for especially those who are new into teaching and want to take that challenge and that step, but actually maybe a little bit worried about doing it. So thank you very much, Becca.
No, it's the least I can do. Thank you. Yeah, just do it. Just go for it. Don't listen to the
doubters.
Just go for it.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, and hope you have a lovely Saturday.
Have a lovely day. See you soon.
Bye. So there you have it. You have had a lovely roundup from hearing from Sally and the landscape of teacher training and understanding what that has looked like from lockdown until now, but also kind of what it did look like before lockdown, which seems quite bizarre, as sometimes we get into a world of not knowing what that actually looked like. But it's interesting to see how things are evolving within the world of teacher training. Esther provided a really lovely insight into training during lockdown, all the things that we could learn, such as MOAT, and how actually that mentor-mentee relationship can provide as much nourishment to the mentor as much as the mentee. And it's interesting that we can become far more reflective practitioners moving forward when it comes to our own practices, and we do have trainees within our departments. So if you do have trainees in your departments this year or in the coming year, please do make them feel welcome and invite them in for a cup of tea, coffee, even if it is just to allow them to talk about their day and maybe reveal that their lesson wasn't the best lesson ever. But we've all had those lessons, and actually that's all right. I would like to share the competition for one more time so that you can be fully informed and engaging with it, because it's important. You've got until the 22nd of May to engage in that competition. So I'll just play it for you one more time.
Do you have something to say about the future of education? Maybe you have some positive ideas about the way things could or should be in the future. Then enter our Teachers Talk Radio competition. Submit a 10-minute video presentation to us by 22nd of May, presenting your ideas about the future of education, and you could win £50. Our host team will select 5 winners who will each win £50 and have their video feature at a high-profile education event. To enter, simply send your video entry to teacherstalkradio@gmail.com with the subject line TTR Competition. We will announce the 5 winners after 22nd of May on Teachers Talk Radio live.
So there you have that competition. You do have until the 22nd of May to be joining with your lovely post. And please do share with us via Twitter. If you haven't already, do be clicking on to Twitter and following us at Teachers Talk Radio 2021. That's TT Radio 2021. If you are somebody that did love this podcast and you want to share your thoughts and you think, oh, actually, I did have a question and I forgot to ask, well, then please tweet me, okay, at Mira Tudorsama, as well as TT Radio 2021. And always, if you are in love with all things research informed and being a practitioner who is in love with doing some research, please do follow Innovate Journal so we can develop that practice together. Hopefully you have gained some insight and hopefully we've been able to reveal some ideas around how to welcome those trainees within to our profession. And if there's anything else that we can do to encourage more trainees into the profession, then we should most definitely do so, given our current situation, given our current climate. It is a tricky one, and it's something I think we're coming out of, hopefully through lockdown, to make this profession somewhat more richer. But we have to be bearing in mind of some of the other trickier parts, shall I say. I know some people had been calling in before, and it would be lovely to hear your thoughts and ideas. And we've been able to share some experiences via texting in. If you do have any other further ideas, you're more than welcome. Do you still have time? Please do feel free to call in. I haven't heard anyone tell me their drink of choice this morning that is summing up their week. So that would be a lovely insight there too. You do have 2 ways to be engaging through the competition, but also carry on listening for today. You have a fabulous lineup this for the rest of the day. For the Saturday brunch from 11 till 12:30, you do have Amy Ferguson. I know she's very interested in what you're eating for brunch, so please do share that with her. I feel like there's a commonality there in having a love for food. And for the Saturday lunch show from 1 till 2:30, you will be joined by Tom Hopkins Burke. So again, please keep your comments coming in via Twitter and be texting and calling in with all your fabulousness when it comes to thinking about all things around teaching. Now, for today, we are closing it up. Hopefully you've enjoyed this fabulous show. Please do get onto Twitter, tweet us. It'll be wonderful to hear your comments, your ideas and your thoughts. It's been wonderful. I've truly enjoyed it. Thank you very much to our special guests, our 3 fabulous special guests. And you'll be joined with me next week in thinking about writing and writing for pleasure. And that'll be a wonderful show where we look at some of the different practices around writing. So for regardless of your subject areas or primary or secondary field, I think you'll have lots to take away from writing for pleasure and looking at that practice into the classroom, all the way from kind of the theoretical ideas. What is it like as a practitioner all the way through? Actually, what can students produce? So you'll look at, again, the full journey of putting ideas into practice. Thank you very much again, listeners. Hopefully you have a lovely Saturday. Take care of yourselves. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Teachers Talk Radio. Tune in live and listen back at ttradio.org. We look forward to hearing from you next time on Teachers Talk Radio.